I am very grateful to be here. I don't come alone. I bring a lot of experience that has been shared with me through the years. My name is Ken, and I'm a very grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups. Thank you. I am just delighted that I had the opportunity to speak with Lily earlier in the weekend and get to know her a little bit better, and she's been an inspiration throughout the weekend for me. I'm never sure where to start. There are some things that I feel like I should just sort of get out of the way because they clutter up the story later. So I think that I will do that this morning. I am a gay member of the community. I've known that for many years. The stories that I tell are basically from that setting. I won't give you any details, or very few at least, because what I want to talk about today is what happened when I came to the Al-Anon Fellowship, and that's the important part of my story. I was the second of seven children. I had an older brother, and from the very beginning, you know, I needed someone to tell me the rules of life. And I must have bugged my brother about it, and he refused to tell me. And so I have come into life not knowing really what to do next. And that's been very important to me. I've always needed to know what to do next. My father was a government worker, and we moved around quite a bit. I was 26 before I lived any place more than 5 years, and that was in Fresno, California. I lived there for 8 years, but I had 9 different addresses, so I sort of, you know, was able to disqualify that from being a long-term resident. And what came out of that is that I was perpetually and repeatedly a newcomer in town, a stranger, different. The service of government my father worked with, we lived on government properties, oftentimes in remote settings, oftentimes and usually amongst a population or a culture that we were not part of. And so I was an outsider as well. And those are not bad things, and I wish that I had had a different attitude as I was growing up, because I think I could have, you know, grown from that or developed an appreciation of that. Instead, my personality, I developed a self-pitying attitude of, you know, being different from or apart from or not a part of, and that was to color my life from then on. I went to public school for the first time in the second grade, and if it's true that we do learn everything we need to know about life in kindergarten, you know, that's another source of my problems. Apparently everyone else went to kindergarten and they were not telling me what they learned. I've been trying to find out ever since. I was traumatized, and even now I joke about it, but I really have the feeling deep down inside that, you know, you white folks really confuse me. You know, I don't know how you think. I don't know what to do next when I'm around you. And I'm very grateful, because part of what I've learned in Al-Anon is that there are some very basic instructions, very simply written, of what to do with my life. And I find that in the 12 steps, in the sharings in the literature, and the sharings at meetings. I find it in the traditions. I find it in the concepts of service, which are all very important to me. And I think that I can honestly say that today that those are my creed. Those are the principles that I live by. I realize that this is a spiritual meeting, and I hope to have some fun with you all this morning. If you can't have fun in a spiritual meeting, where can you have fun, right? And I'm not going to tell you about the insanity and the powerlessness and the unmanageability of my life. As I describe my life, I want you to see if you can see any of it. You know, see if you can find the insanity in this picture. I have very few memories of childhood. I understand that I had one. I'm turning 40 this year, and the prerequisite for turning 40 is that you have the first 5 or 10 or 12 years of life. It's one of those rules that seem to be out there. I guess other people learned that in kindergarten. What I do remember is waking up at about 12 or 13. Someone had turned the faucets of hormone on, full gush, full confusion. I was made aware of myself from the outside, and a lot of the knowledge that I gained, a lot of the experience that I've had since was sort of based on half-truths and half-information that I got from others. I very early decided that when I get there, when I'm that age, or when I have that job, or when I'm with that person, you know, I will find happiness. And that's, again, not something that I think is necessarily bad. It's just that I waited to be happy until I got there, or met them, or did that. And I, in many situations, have not gotten there yet, have not met them yet, and I don't know when it's going to happen. But I've learned that I don't have to wait for my happiness until I get there. And I can start to develop the happiness now. In our daily reader, the One Day at a Time in Al-Anon book, they don't tell you that until June 3rd. I'm very grateful that people share their experience throughout the year. If I had been left to just a One Day at a Time book, you know, 6 months before I find out that if I really truly want peace of mind, that it does not depend on situations outside myself, but those inside myself, I might not have stayed. I needed to find that out pretty quickly. When I was about roughly 19, I was a very nice child, a very good child. I didn't feel that way, you know, but I tried to act that way. I tried to act the bestest child I could. And I don't remember doing anything bad until I was older, and then it was so fun that I didn't stop. I didn't find out what drinking could do until I was 19. I found out what a drunk would say to me, and drunks say very nice things early on. I found out what I would say and do. I became a drinking partner of many drunks very, very quickly. In fact, I don't remember any slow process of going into that. One of the things that I've only been really acutely aware of and gotten in touch with so far as the feelings of it is that I was also very abusive early on. And I don't know why. I don't know what it was. I know that the anger was there very early. When I was with someone who was drunk, I became abusive. There have been instances of physical abuse. Much more, it's been emotional and verbal abuse, intimidation and belittlement. And I'm very, very sorry for that. I worry about getting in front of a group like this because, you know, I was in Utah during some of those years, and I'm not sure if any of you were the victims of that. I know what alcohol does to the alcoholic. And I learned that from the book Alcoholics Anonymous and other AA literature. It says that the alcoholic will find himself in sort of places looking for company of the less satisfying nature. And I know that that's true because I was the one buying you drinks there. You might not recognize me. I don't know what I look like. I hope that I put on a good show. But I was oftentimes the one who would buy you the next drink until finally I could honestly say, you're too drunk to drive, let me drive you home. And that happened more than once. And I know what drunkenness is like. I've been there too. But what I need to remember is that the way it affected me, the way that I took it into my life, and ran with it, is the experience that I'm here to share, and the recovery from that. I eventually got to the place where I was needing to buy a bottle of wine for someone at 6:30 in the morning so that they went DT on me. And it was an odd experience because I really feel like I should have known better. I was at the liquor store going through the shelves of wine, and the wine that they put on shelves is the kind that has labels that are in Italian or French or something, and I remember the indecision of of which white wine to buy for someone who is about to go into DTs. I'm grateful that someone let me in on the secret that a Mickey of Thunderbird will do just as much, and that's oftentimes what they wanted anyway. I went through several relationships. I began to really, describe and recount them. But I went through, my life in a pretty hectic way. I moved to Utah in 1985 again. I had lived here before. And I was without a relationship. And it was a geographical cure. I was trying to get away from the way that I was living with people. And I had a nice vacation. My baggage didn't arrive for about 3 months. And then it all arrived. And I went crazy. And I knew that I needed to do something about it. In 1976, in Salt Lake, I met a man who was a member of AA. And he introduced me to the incredible program of AA. And I'm very grateful that I've known other members because, this man practiced the 13 steps, and it's the ones who practice the 12 steps that I prefer to hang around today. And I have practiced that other program. I know that there are people out there today, and I hope that they're in recovery, that because of my 13-step work, they had difficulty with their first step. And, that's an amends that I owe to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful, that recovery is sometimes, for some of us at least, stronger than the disease. And I'm very grateful for those of you who are here who have experienced that. In the 12 steps, the Al-Anon family groups and adapted them to its use from AA. It changed only one word, and that's in the 12th step. And it's not in any of the other steps. And that's important for me to remember is that, the program that I work today, I have very gratefully received from the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and from its early members. And I'm very grateful for that because I suffer from the same disease. I suffer from alcoholism. And it took me a long time to realize that, I needed to find a program of recovery for the alcoholism as I suffered from it. I tried dealing with the alcoholism the way you suffered from it. I tried dealing with alcoholism the way that other people were dealing with it. And it was nice. It was good ideas, some incredible, really decent, ideas. But I needed to find a program for myself. Era last night said something. I saw her come in. There you are. That always irks me. Because it's true, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And that's not bad, it's just that, I was looking for a teacher for a long time, and I looked for teachers in many places. And the truth is that when the student's ready, the teacher appears. And I spent a long time looking, which only indicates that I wasn't ready. I don't know what it took to get ready, but it finally I got there. I became active in the Al-Anon family groups almost immediately. I had gone to an Al-Anon meeting some years back when I was involved with someone in AA, and it was nice. There was a very nice group of women. They seemed happy. I was glad for them. I wished them all the luck. But I was different. I was not married to an alcoholic. A minor detail when you think of alcoholic marriages, what's marriage got to do with it? I called Al-Anon in Ogden, the town that I was working at. I live in Sunset. And I kept on missing the meeting by that much. The bus leaves at 7:45, the meeting starts at 8. I would have been 5 minutes late. I can't go there. Until one day I needed to have something. And so I thought, I've got to meet someone in AA. That'll do it. If I want to feel better, I have to find someone that's in recovery. So I went to an AA meeting. Didn't work. I got so mad. And some of those feelings, and I've only understood the feelings really, because of working my program, doing my fourth step, my fifth step, and looking at my character defects. Yeah, but the anger was just another reminder that I needed something for myself, you know, that I can no longer, you know, ride on the short tails or in the shadow or in the light of someone else's program. I needed a program for me. And I had grown to love the language of recovery, you know, gratitude, serenity, happy, joyous, and free. Those were not things that I heard, you know, outside the meeting rooms. And so I went to Al-Anon. I did make it to a meeting. It was in March of 1986, and I count that as the time that I came into Al-Anon, not the time that I recognized I was affected by alcoholism, but the time that I came into the Al-Anon Fellowship. And again, it was a very pleasant sensation, a room of very nice women, all dressed very nicely, you know, and I knew that I would have to talk about my life in front of these very nice people, and they would never understand because I was different. Boy, am I glad that they shared their stories with me because, you know, had they not, you know, I might have gone out of the room still feeling different and not gone back, and I needed to come back in. Rather than feeling like a newcomer at that first meeting, I felt like I had come home. There was something in that room. And there are many different ways of explaining it, and I'm going to talk about some of those a little bit later. One of the things that I did very early on was volunteer my time at the Information Center there in Ogden. And in fact, I was there March 26th, 1987, almost a year later. And someone called, a woman called, and I think that she called the Information Center because she had been affected by alcoholism, and this is why. The first thing she said to me was, "You're the queer, aren't you?" Yeah, it wasn't a question. Yeah, I mean, and I said, "Well, this is the Al-Anon Information Center. May I help you?" And why are you in Al-Anon? Every Information Center volunteer learns to say, "The Al-Anon Fellowship is a fellowship of friends and relatives of alcoholics who share their experience." And that's what I started to say, and she hung up. And it took me a moment to realize that she hadn't called to find out about Al-Anon. She had called to share some of the pain of her life. I remember that it was March 26th because I got scared. You know, they had found me. They had invaded what for a year had been a safe place for me. And I called a member of Al-Anon because that's what they told me to do. One of those things that I guess everyone else learned in kindergarten, Al-Anon taught me that I can call someone and not live alone with my fear. And the woman I called, the member of Al-Anon that I called, said, "What does the thought for today say?" And this is what it said. "Why is it so hard to admit that we are powerless over alcohol, as the first step suggests that we do? All of us have heard and shared in discussions at Al-Anon meetings as to whether this should be interpreted as alcohol or the alcoholic. We have no power over either one." No one can control the insidious effect of alcohol or its power to destroy the graces and decencies of life. I think that the caller that day had had the graces and decencies of her life destroyed by alcoholism. And because those graces and decencies had been destroyed, rather than living that alone, she wanted to share that, and she picked me to share it with. And I'm very grateful that I was able to turn around and ask a member of Al-Anon to share some recovery, with me. We borrow quite a bit in Al-Anon. This is my book called Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of you might be familiar with this book. I've used it quite a bit. And this is what it says about alcoholism. "An illness of this sort, and we've come to believe it's an illness, involves those about us in a way that no other human sickness can." There was another part of that I wanted to read. The drink problem. I might not use it. Okay, once he takes the alcohol, whatever in his system, something happens, both bodily, mentally, both bodily and in mental sense. That's alcoholism. And I've come to believe that it's a disease, and I've come to believe that it's a family disease, and I've come to believe that it affects anyone who spends any time with it in any relationship. You know, the Al-Anon family groups are composed of mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, friends and relatives, sons and daughters, lovers, neighbors, teachers. You know, if it's alcoholism, it's going to affect someone else beside the drinker. And that's what I've learned here, is that I was affected in a way that I didn't understand. And if I've been affected by that disease called alcoholism, and I've come to believe it's a disease, then why not draw on the experience of those who have found the solution? And that's what the Al-Anon program is for me, is the solution to the suffering that I'm doing from the disease of alcoholism. I have this ego. It's almost an ugly word, isn't it? That I've had to deal with all my life, for 40 years, almost. I didn't like to talk about not being able to figure it out. And that's what I do here. I talk about not being able to figure it out. And I would like to say that some of that was relieved as soon as I did steps 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 12. Or 11. It hasn't, and in fact, it continues even today. And this weekend had some examples of that. I had a stiff back coming down on Friday. I got chilled as I was packing the car, and I came down with a stiff back, and I walked around with a stiff back for 2 days, because I was going to make my stiff back go away. I was going to fix it. I was going to take care of it. I was going to relieve myself of my pain and discomfort. I was going to do it on my own. Saturday morning, I woke up about 5 o'clock, and the room that I had was very nice, and I want to thank the committee for that, but it had a great big bed, and I was stuck in the middle, and I couldn't turn over, and I couldn't move, and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to get out of the bed. And the program gives me choices, and it took a while, but I finally became willing that if I absolutely had to, I would call and ask someone to help me get out of bed. And I didn't have to do that. But later on, I took some medicine for my stiff back. 2 days. 2 days to take a couple of medicine, because I was going to do it my way. I was going to do it myself. I was going to make my back feel better. I was going to think it well. That's what my ego does. That's what my nature is that, I will not ask for help, come hell or high water. I'm going to figure it out myself. In the Al-Anon program, when we talk about that, we suggest to newcomers, and it's been suggested to me over and over again, why not admit that you're powerless over the situation and that it's making your life unmanageable to resist it? And that's my first step, saying, I can't do this on my own. I've tried and it hasn't worked. I can ask for help or become willing to. Obviously, I've been able to get out of bed for the last 2 days, but I had to come to that place again of saying, if I need to, I'll call and ask someone to help me get out of bed. It's a humbling experience, and it's not one that I like. And, I hold on to my ego as if it was a friend. Instead, it's just a relationship. The second step is that I came to believe that there was some place to ask, a power that I didn't have on my own. For my stiff back, it was Anderson. That's simple enough. For those areas of my life affected by alcoholism, it's a little bit less cut and dry. It's a little bit more vague. It's a little bit... spiritual, coming to believe that I don't have all the tools by myself. And I didn't grow up in a home that talked about those things. I come from a non-religious home. I believed that I came from an atheist home. I told my parents that once. Boy, were they surprised. Boy, was I surprised that they were surprised. I thought I came from an atheist home. And Oh, no, Kev, we're just non-religious. Well, I'm atheist, and that's just the fact of the situation. But what I found in the program is that, so what? I can find a power that I don't have on my own, and it can restore me to sanity, as if I needed that. And that power I've found here, I don't know if I was aware of a power out there, and I'm very grateful for being in Ridgeville this weekend. It's a place that there's something here, there's something in all of central Utah, southern Utah, and I'm not sure what it is. Some people have suggested that it's a vortex, an ancient and welcoming spirit, and perhaps that's true. But I feel it most when I'm involved with you, this group in here today, when I'm involved with members of my program, the Al-Anon Pama groups, and with the members of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's when I feel it. You know, that's when I feel that power that I don't have on my own. That's when I feel that power that just makes me want to say thank you. I say thank you to the hotel room. I say thank you to the mountains. I say thank you to the roads. I feel something different here that I didn't feel out there. And I certainly didn't feel it when I was, you know, waiting to get over there, waiting to meet them, waiting to do that. You know, I didn't feel it until I came into a room that had some rules to live by, admit that I'm powerless over alcohol, that my life has become unmanageable. And I was able to come to believe that there was a power that I didn't have to do that. If I take the steps and the traditions and the concept of service, I am turning my life and my will over to the care of a power that I don't have on my own. If I follow some simple suggestions, some clear instructions, you know, that is turning my life and my will over. If I'm going to ask someone who I love dearly but I don't know to help me get out of bed, you know, chances are that I'm trusting the care of my life a little bit more than I used to, and I believe that I will continue to do that as long as I remain part of the program. My inventory, and the first step, a searching and fearless moral inventory, I was confused about that, especially coming from the life that I had come from. You know, when I read that moral inventory, I thought they meant, what did you do? And so I didn't do it for a long time. And one day I was in pain, and I had heard a man speak in California about some issues that I needed to address. And I wasn't aware of how much. Until then, I heard a man speak, and I knew that he knew something that I could use. And I asked him if he would help me with my first step, and he said, sure. Go ahead and write it down, and we'll do the fifth step next weekend. And that's how it happened. I wrote down very little. I wrote it down the night before. And I talked for several hours. I think that I talked for about 5 hours. My moral inventory today is that. It's an inventory of what I believe is right and wrong for Ted. And I'm well aware that there are some things that, you know, really don't matter to me. I can do them on Wednesday and Friday and again on Sunday afternoon, and they don't faze me. And for someone else, it would just be really a pretty big decision. But there are things that I've done over and over and over again that I don't believe in doing. And some of those things I wasn't aware of. You know, I just flat believed that they were wrong, but I didn't know how to not do them because I didn't know how to identify them. And I really believe that had I not taken that inventory, had I not continued to take the inventory since then, you know, that I would have continued to suffer from doing things that I didn't believe were right for me. Some of those things other people wanted me to do. Some of those things were good ideas. Some of those things looked great on you, but they weren't me. You know, they were not my decision between right and wrong. And when I talked about the exact nature of my wrongs, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. Because the exact nature of my wrongs is a very small list, repeated over and over and over. I really did believe, and I still believe, that most people make a mistake once and they learn from it. You must have learned that in kindergarten, you know. Because I didn't learn it until I got here. And sometimes I've only learned it recently. I'm not sure if last week I would have been willing to call someone to help get me out of bed. I learned that this weekend. You know, I'm still learning that. The exact nature of my wrongs is really not a wide variety. It's just that I cannot stop the cycle. I was powerless over something and my life had become unmanageable. Over and over and over again. You know, and those are the steps that I stay pretty close to. You know, the first five, and you know, that fifth step, and I've heard other people say the first three is the foundation, and that's great. You know, it's just that I need to remember that I have to tell someone when I start to feel I'm in that cycle again, and so I have to have that admission and that decision and that you know, finding out what it is, taking a look at it and telling someone. Because if I don't, I keep it. And one of the things I was talking with Lily on Friday about is that I have a mind like a camera about what you did. I have these wonderful, clear, permanent snapshots of what other people did. I can't remember what I did, oddly enough. Yeah. And I have the snapshots because I will not let go. And I won't let go, and I haven't let go until I've told someone about it and gotten permission, you know, gotten the information, gotten the shared experience that I can let go of that and leave it in the past where I belong. And I think that that's one of the reasons I don't remember my childhood, is that I keep on putting my personality now into my childhood so that, you know, I've basically, I keep it alive and well, or at least alive, alive and affected. The program today involves action. I've described a life from very early on of feeling apart from. I've always wanted to feel a part of. The solution is to take part in. And I take part in the Al-Anon family groups. I take part to the best of my ability. I take part to the fullest of my nature, which means that I have made some grievous mistakes in Al-Anon. I have led with my ego foot more often than I'd like to tell you. I was going to say my grandchildren. Imagine that. but I take part in, you know. And that has been the source of my recovery, is that I don't just go to Al-Anon meetings, and I do go to a lot of Al-Anon meetings, but I don't just go. I take part in. To hear the wide variety of my stories, you really had to go to Al-Anon meetings, and I invite everyone to do that, because, you know, it really is not something that I can just, you know, sit down and remember. I borrow from quite a bit, this bag, and I've had several people give me the different bags, and they all wear out. I'd like to share a little bit. This was a wife of an early AA member, and she talks about the meeting rooms, and this is what I have found also. This is Ruth G. I felt the presence of God in that meeting more than any other place I've ever been. This is for us, I said. Let's grow up here together. We decided, and we both made it our life's work, to build our lives around the spiritual aspect of Alcoholics Anonymous. The Al-Anon family groups borrowed much from AA, and I'm very grateful for that. But the program is our own, and I keep it my own by taking part in it and by going to Al-Anon family group meetings, you know, and sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and by talking about the principles. And I do that because this is where I found it. One of the teachers that I was looking for finally did arrive. Strangely enough, after I came to Al-Anon, figured that. One of the things that he expressed in his writings that I was reading was the difference between an organization, a group, and a spiritual program, is that the one has great ideas, and he has great ideas for me. The difference between that and the spiritual program that I find in Al-Anon is that for me, the miracle works, the miracle happens in Al-Anon. It has happened over and over again. There seems to be no shortage of miracles in the Al-Anon family groups for me. I believe that that's what happens to the member of AA when they go to their meetings, and that it doesn't happen for them when they go to the Al-Anon meetings. You know, we probably have some great ideas for members of AA. AA has some great ideas for me. But the miracles work. The miracles happen. The miracles come for me when I'm in an Al-Anon family groups meeting. That's where I found the spiritual program. More than good ideas, but a spiritual program. And, you know, that's what I have. The steps for Al-Anon suggest the acceptance of these four primary ideas: that we are powerless over a problem of alcoholism, that we can turn our lives over to a power greater than ourselves, that we need to change both our attitudes and our actions, and that we keep Al-Anon's gifts by sharing them with others. And it's been true for me. I find that to be true. And I would like to close with this thought. It's a good book, even for those of us who are never married, Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage, because it does affect our home lives. Our search should not be as much for a solution to a problem or a way out of our difficulty, no matter how pressing. The search must be for inspiration, for insight, and one cannot know that he will do with it, with an insight, until he gets it. Part of the necessary condition is to set aside one's own problems and needs, even the urgent and painful ones, and be prepared to receive and act upon a new insight. It may seem to have little relevance to our problems or needs, but it may indeed point to a new way in which our effort must be directed while we continue to bear our old burdens. There is no cure for alcoholism, to my knowledge. Al-Anon has not cured me of anything, but it has given me a way to live, no matter what burdens I came in here this morning with, no matter what burdens I go home with tonight. I have a way to live between the two, and a way to live tomorrow when I wake up. Thank you very much.